time and be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist. Joey B has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. I've got the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today's show, the title, The Cape Cod Experience. This is on my series, Vacations Across America. Well, let's talk about Cape Cod. How historic. This is the beginning of American history, dating back all the way to the Mayflower. And I'm going to tell you some cool Mayflower facts in a little bit. The beauty that's there in the bays, the oceans, the salt ponds, which are so unique. And it's a laid-back lifestyle. My vacation up there was actually a fishing slash nature adventure. So before you turn this off going, well, I am just the whatever, and I'm not a fisherman. Well, a lot of it's about fishing, but I'm going to tell you right now. As an environmental scientist, everywhere I go, I've got my digital camera and click, click, click. And the beauty that is there, and I'm going to talk about the ecosystems from animals to plants and a couple extra little things in there. This is a really cool place for a vacation. This show was brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. My second love in life is American history. I'll bring to light about, you know, a number of facts about our forefathers. Well, when you go to Cape Cod, talking about fishing, there's two types. There is the freshwater or the saltwater. As a scientist, we instead of saltwater, we just call it seawater. So if you say hear me saying seawater, that's what I'm talking about. You need to take double the amount of gear. Because think about this. You need all the gear for saltwater, seawater. You need all the gear for freshwater. So let's go up there. This vacation I was up there was early spring. Matter of fact, really cool. I just returned. So all of this is fresh in my mind. So early spring, this is when striper migration, they are the striped bass, they're migrating back to this area. So it is really cool to figure this out because during their migration, they are starting somewhere off the coast of North Carolina and they are slowly making their way up along the coast and they're getting to the Cape Cod region around the beginning, I'll say the May 8th date. But that's one of the things that you want to know. There's also some stripers that are, they winter over. My good buddy Steve Keen, fly fishing guide up there. Steve will just say that there's so many that will actually winter over that are there. Now, there are these salt ponds that are there, and this is where we did our fishing. And on this trip, the salt ponds are pretty, it's a unique ecosystem. So you think about like one of the large bays. So you have all this water, which is seawater, and it follows these small little channels or canals, and they get smaller and smaller, and some of them are as wide as a car. And they just keep going back, and all of a sudden they go into a pond. Well, they're tidal. You've got seawater coming in, so the stripers come in, because if the bait fish, think about this, and I always describe it this way, if your refrigerator went racing down the street, you'd go racing after it because that's your food. Well, wherever a larger fish or shark is looking for food, well, they're following their bait fish. They're following their food source. So they're following their, we'll call it so to speak, they're following their refrigerators there. Now, you know, in those salt ponds, you could be fishing along and all of a sudden a seal pops its head up out of the water. And seals are very, and they're harbor seals that are up there, they're very inquisitive and they sometimes just want to pop and say hello. Not on this trip, another trip. Coach Gorski, my good buddy Steve Keen, and I were fishing in Barnstable Harbor. We're out there in the kayaks, and I'm standing probably in waist-deep water. I've got my fly rod in this one. And while I'm fishing, a seal pops his head up out of the water, probably about 10 feet from me, looks at me, smiles, pops his and down, and off he was gone. But that's sort of what goes on, you know, when I talk about, like, the nature that's there. On the last one, with the trip I just returned, we're in one of the salt ponds where we actually leave, and I'll talk about timing, but we leave this one. It's just an after dinner, 5 till dark. So we're there, and while I'm fishing in a salt pond, an osprey is up in a tree. He flew up, so I figured he's going to roost there for the night. So I grab my camera. See, here's the deal. I want to fish, and I do want to catch fish, but when nature's going on, I just drop my rod, hopefully in the kayak, not out. I just drop the rod, pick up my camera, and that's what I want to. So I'm shooting with the camera. So I'm clicking away, get a couple cool pictures, and you could always check out all my photos. You could see them on the Joey B's Outdoor Adventure fan page on Facebook. You can go to Joey B on Instagram. On Twitter, it's Joey B News, J-O-E-Y-B-E-E News. And I always use an underwater camera when I'm in the kayak because guess what? Not that I want to film underwater. It takes pictures above water, but it means it's a waterproof camera because so many people ruin cameras when they take them into, especially seawater, but they take them in and they're not, you know, rated for being waterproof. Well, as my story goes with the Osprey, as time goes on, and I'm a guy who's just like, I've got to stretch my legs all the time. So I paddle over to a little sandy beach. There's an Osprey platform. These are platforms that man has built so Ospreys can nest on them. You see them all up and down the East Coast. And I figure I can get out and stretch here because the Ospreys have them paired up, mated, etc. So I get out. I'm stretching my legs. I pick up the saltwater fly rod because I've been using a spin rod in the kayak. I said, I'll just stretch here and use this one for a little. And all of a sudden, a head pops out of the platform, and I am like 10 feet from it, and starts calling incessantly. And the one that was in the tree that was maybe 100 yards away that I was filming before comes flying over, and I realize, yes, they have paired up. The one in the nest was probably sitting on eggs, and no, I don't belong there. So I got an up-close and personal view, and I guess you would be a little ticked off as well if I sort of just showed up at your in your house or next to your house or not next to your front door. So that's just sort of, I guess, the Osprey experience that are there. And there are nesting platforms all around there. I now know early May, it is early enough for them to pair up. And one of the other cool things is as you're paddling along on the edges, there are all these beds of mussels and they are just everywhere and really neat to see. So, you know, as I said, this is a Cape Cod fishing adventure. Yeah, but again, I'm the nature guy, environmental scientist. I'm out there and like anything I see. So I figure we would talk about a little bit about nature and I will continue to do that. And I'm also going to get into a little bit of the history of Cape Cod as well. Now, the perfect mode of transportation up there happens to be, no, it's not a vehicle. If you're, there's a Cape Cod rail trail, which is a bike trail, which goes all the way through the island. So typically when you get to Cape Cod, you make sure your bike is with you because you could park your truck. That's what I drive. And you can park your truck and then get on your bike and bike everywhere. Bike to the ShopRites and Food Lions and all the other places that they sell food. And then the other side of that one is, besides that, once you get to water, your perfect mode of transportation is to sit on top kayak. It's important because you will get in and out of that kayak many, many times. And I have a fleet of touring kayaks, but the sit on top is the one that, you know, when I know that you're in and out of the kayak all day long, that's it. It's the perfect place for photos. And so far, like, there's no fishing. So let's go to salt pond fishing. And let's talk about the gear list, the things you're going to need for that salt pond fishing. But first, I need to take a little Aqua Free. I need a little sip of water here. Perfect. And now back. And the most important gear you could ever take anytime you're in a kayak is your PFD, your personal flotation device, which happens to be a life vest, but now we call them PFDs, and they are. I talk all the time about I use my PFD. Once it goes on, it stays on from skinny water, which is thin water, to heavy water. Because think about this. Sometimes you're in deeper water, and people say, well, you don't need it when you're skinny water. Well, guess what? When I got out of the kayak and it was real shallow water that I was going to be standing in and casting, well, guess what? As soon as you get back in the kayak, you're in heavy water, so it should stay on all the time. Another thing, and these are all the safety things, you need to have SPF clothing on. So they now make these really cool shirts. Besides, you get to look cool out there. But as my dad would always say, dressing for weather is not a fashion statement, so you make sure you're good. But they have SPF clothing that's 50 plus. I wear a hat, polarized sunglasses, which are also minor prescription because I wear my sunglasses everywhere, as you probably noticed from my photos. You sunblock up whatever's left, whether it's your hands, the back of your hands, your wrists, because you have reflection coming off, your face and neck, all that. And sunblock works better than sunscreen, and you want an SPF of 30 plus, and you need to reapply And you also know, if you don't know this, you're supposed to put that sunblock on a half hour before you go out there. There's an absorption rate. It needs to get absorbed into your body. And as time goes on, especially with friction, especially with water, you're going to need to reapply. You should always have water everywhere you go. So I have my water bottle, my Joey B's Outdoor Adventure water bottle, of course. And you need some energy that's out, you know, when you're out there. I am a pretty much close to an organic guy. So I've got a little bag I always bring of mixture of sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds. And I have this little cooler that fits perfectly in the back of my sit-on-top kayak. And, hey, I don't go anywhere in life without food, so my lunch is inside there as well. That waterproof camera, as I mentioned before. And now think about this. You may spend hours upon hours out there in that kayak, whether you're just shooting nature-wise, paddling just because you enjoy it, or you're fishing, and you need to have a comfortable seat. And I made an investment and bought a very, very comfortable seat with a high back to it, great comfort. Because, you know what, just sitting around, I'm not a sit guy. It's funny. I'm in a studio now doing the podcast stuff, and I'm sitting. And once I'm done here, I will be standing and moving for the rest of the day. I'm not a sit-down type of guy. So in the kayak, you're sitting. I found that comfortable seat. Now, I always bring dry bags with me. Everyone's got – they will rig their kayaks up certain ways, and I have my dry bags, and I have a couple little clamps that will just lock down, and so I can lock them into the kayak. I couldn't think for a second. And as I lock them in there, you know, I might put my fishing tackle inside of there. I might put an extra fleece top inside of there. But once I have them with some clamps, I just clamp them, because the kayaks always come with extra little places you can clamp things to, because I don't want them going in the drink, going in the water. Now, when we are fishing in the salt ponds, we are wearing waders. And I have found the waist waders from Cabela's to be the best way. Out of all the waders, I have chest-high waders. They're simply the best waders I've ever used. And I always use Teva sandals. You just readjust them, because I'll wear Tevas if it's warm water somewhere. I don't know. Say I'm fishing somewhere, USA, and I just want something on my feet. I put the Teva sandals on. I adjust them just to my, you know, bare skin, so to speak. And then with the sandals, you just readjust them so they're larger. And they have great traction on them. So, you know, if I'm getting out to stretch my legs, use a fly rod, something like that. So here you go. Let's get into fishing and what are you using. My rod of choice is a TFO Gary Loomis. Gary Loomis teamed up with TFO a couple years back, and I've worked with Rick Pope, president of TFO there, helped design a backpackable fly spin rod combo with them, and it's a Gary Loomis rod. So I use a Gary Loomis 7'3" medium action, quarter ounce to three quarter ounce rod. It's priced well. I match it up with a Cabela's 20 series reel with braided line. And to me, it's the perfect schoolie rod, the perfect, because schoolies happen to be smaller striped bass. So it's the perfect schoolie rod. It's also the perfect big boy striper rod. So it just really works well. A lot of guys will actually have a second rod in there for trolling. And me, my second rod typically is my 8-weight fly rod that I take. When I'm using, and it's, this show is more about the spin rod action and all, because that's really what most of my Cape Cod experience fishing vacation was about. But with that 8-weight fly rod, some of the flies that I would use, there's some really good sand eel imitations that are out there, clousers. Ran into another fly fisherman. And, you know, the cool thing is you're always sharing information with different people you meet up. And it's like anything on vacation. You have this great chat. Everyone's laid back. And he actually made out of, and you can purchase all of this online, he had a colored rabbit's hair that looked like a clouser minnow, and he said that that caught quite a number of fish for him. Well, going back to the spin rod, you know, I use a straight shank hook, a white Charlie Brewer with a little bit of fluorescent green, a wiggle tail on the end there, and let me tell you, that is the one thing that is, so to speak, the fish magnet that is there. Things you're going to need, there are the fish clamps, the fish grips, they're like vice grips. The plastic ones, because this way seawater is not going to corrode them. Because when you pick up a striper, they don't have teeth, but in their cartilage mouth, there's all these pointy ridges that are inside of there because they will actually crush crustaceans. They will crush up shells, you know, mollusks. So it's a really tough thing. And if you try to lip them the way you would a largemouth bass, smallmouth bass, in fresh water, you will begin to cut up your fingers quite a bit. So this clamp works well because you simply clamp it, doesn't hurt them at all. Have a pliers inside there. And with the pliers, just take the hook out, clamp it over the water, and they're gone. So I am a catch and release guy, by the way, because my deal in life is I'd rather go catch them when they've grown up, allow them to reproduce. And that's just me. I mean, you make your own decisions in there. Well, the schoolies, when they hit, they hit as if it was their last meal on earth. So they hit so hard. It is amazing. You look at something that's like, say, 22 inches long. And I went, bang, when he hits with such great force. When we were in the salt ponds, it was mostly schoolies that were there. Caught a couple that were a little bit larger, but it was mostly the schoolies. And one of them towed my kayak around the salt. I mean, besides hitting, there's a great strength to him. So he's towing my kayak around as I'm reeling him in. So it's pretty cool stuff. And prior to the trip, here's the things you want to check a little bit. You want to check water temps because they are following the water temps going up. Think about this. They're following their food source going up, but their food source is following the water temps going up. So that's one of the things. And you also want to check the tide charts. You can catch all of this online. If you go to On the Water, On the Water is a magazine. It's also a TV show in the Northeast. And the On the Water magazine, I find to be, it's probably the best outdoor magazine. Even though it's regionalized, it is the best outdoor magazine I've ever read. They've actually asked me years past to do some writing for them. I just, right now, my life, don't have the time. And one day, I probably will sit down and write a cool article for them. Hopefully, it'll be a cool article. So going back to, you can check the On the Water for all these, the tide charts. You want to know wind speed, wind direction, because think about this. People always say, oh, well, you have to see which way the wind's blowing. And that's, well, the wind blows in a direction, let's say it happens to be in a channel or a salt pond. Well, what it's doing as it's blowing the plankton, microscopic organism. And so the food chain actually begins. So the first place I go to on a windy day is wherever the wind is blowing something to, because it's going to blow the food chain. And obviously you tend to find fish, larger fish there, because they're following the food chain. So that's just something. And one of the other things I do is everywhere I go, I have a small notebook. And in my notebook, I always record, okay, on this date, this direct wind direction, this wind speed, the sun was, the temperature, the water temperature. And you tend to take these notes because you may go somewhere else in life going, oh, wow. And it's just a tiny little notebook. But I happen to be this freshwater fly fisherman, and I will always write down which fly I was using and why I caught. It's almost like, why did I catch a fish? What were the conditions that allowed that fish to be caught? So that's just something for you to think about. And my buddy Steve Keen, who's the fly fisherman up there, Steve has the number one rule. And by the way, when you meet up with Steve, if you ever fly, he only does kayak excursions. And when we were doing this trip up here, we were just out on our own because Coach Gorski is pretty much the guy that's up there. Coach goes up for a month a year and he fishes up there. So he knows it really well. But Steve Keen's number one rule, and it's funny, when you talk to Steve, all of a sudden he'll say, my number one rule is, and then 10 minutes later he's going, and my number one rule is. So Steve has many number one rules, but I like this number one rule. His number one rule is never leave fish to get on fish. Because some people are going, it's slowing down here, so we should go over there. He's like, no. There's a reason why the fish are there. Don't leave. Well, I spoke to you about modes of transportation being bikes and sit on top kayaks. Well, the pickup truck up there is the perfect thing, and I am a pickup guy. I've got my Chevy Colorado crew cab truck of the year. But my Joey B mobile up there, or anywhere I drive across the country, it's the perfect place because you could load multiple kayaks in it. Now, this is something I learned from my buddies who grew up on the shore. I grew up in Jersey a million years ago. And all my shore buddies, once they're out of seawater, they wash every bit of equipment, from your pliers to your rod to your reel to your kayak to your PFD, like your seat. Everything that you took into the seawater gets washed down because we don't want any corrosion. So I say that to you. It doesn't matter where you are across the country, if you're going into Pacific Ocean, Atlantic Ocean, Gulf of Mexico, wherever you are, come out of seawater, wash it down. And somebody said, well, it's only a rental. Well, no, it doesn't matter. It's your job to take care of everything in life. So it's just that simple for it. So now, we talked about the saltwater part of my vacation across America. So we haven't spoke about the freshwater. But before we go to freshwater, let's go to a walk through the American history that's up here at Cape Cod. And as I speak through about this history, think about this. I'm also going to give you the coolest Mayflower fact in the history of the world, but I'm going to save it to the end. Don't you hate it when you're listening to shows and they go, oh, no, I can't tell you. Well, I'm going to hold my audience in suspense. And I'm sure you know that this show is brought to you by Tranquility Mountain Backpacks. Have you seen the Joey B Signature Series? If you haven't, go to TranquilityMountain.com. This is where adventures begin. Now, the history that's there, the towns, if you look at them, the towns, some of them were incorporated in the late 1600s and 1700s. So you've got some really old towns, some really old homesteads. There are some homes that are still standing from there. And I'm going to tell you, even in the, you pick up, it's funny, we were hanging out, just relaxing after dinner one night, and I picked up one of the, they're trying to sell vacation homes up there, and just homes. And there is a bit of history of every town that's in there. So everywhere you look, they're giving you this piece of American history. So take the time, do a little reading, ask a few questions, visit those homes. I'd say make sure you take a number of photos. Some of the homes that are not even historic are still built with that history in mind. You want to visit these, take some photos that are there. Remember that there are many. See, we would call them, when you're driving, call them circles. But up there, they are called rotaries. And you want to know the rotaries before you even get there. So you want to check maps before you go there, because the rotaries, some of them have 4 and 5 different exits. And unless you want to go round and round and round, which is pretty cool, but you sort of want to find, so make sure you've done that. And there's this charming old world beauty to the homes that are there. And you know what's funny? I've seen yield signs, the yellow sign. And I was driving in the back and, headed towards one of the freshwater places. And it's a yield-shaped sign, yellow sign, and it said heavily settled, from the settlers that are there. And I'm like, wow. So they're telling you that there's a lot of people that live here. And it's funny. There weren't that many people as far as, I was concerned back there. But there were signs that were there. Just a really cool thing. And you want to always have, and I do this across America, you want to have conversations with local residents, because they're going to give you, they'll tell you about some of the historic sites or maybe even some of the history of the town, but they also help you with, say you're going out to a restaurant, and many places just keep advertising, go to, I'll say Joey B's restaurant, go to Joey B's. Well, you talk to the locals and they're going, no, the Joey B's, that's a good one. But if you go to the Outdoor Adventure, and I'm just making these up, by the way, you go to the Outdoor Adventure restaurant, it has the best seafood, the best Italian, the best. Well, so you want to talk to locals all the time. Many times they'll tell you, you may be renting in a nice place, you're on a vacation, and they're saying, but if you go here next year, they'll tell you about better places to rent. Maybe you're looking for a place that's out of the way, maybe you're looking for a cheaper price. Locals tell you so much about it, the area. And now, I'm going to talk to you also about something with the history that's there. And this is not being morbid. You actually want to go check out some of the old cemeteries, and they're marked off. And you look there and you're seeing people, because again, they didn't live as long. So you're looking at the names, and some of them are so worn down. And I would shoot with the camera and a zoom to get on it. And some of these are from the 1600s and 1700s. And the size of the actual stone referred to the age, because there were many children, because again, with diseases that we didn't have cures for way back when, and the stones up there for children sometimes are only like 8 inches tall. And you look at all of this, but it still gives you a piece of the history of who lived there, because you might have a whole family in one part of a cemetery, and you notice the whole family tree is sitting there. So it does give you that piece of history. And you want to check out the towns, and I'll give you a good one. The first time I ever went to Cape Cod, my fishing experience, we were fishing in Barnstable Harbor, and Coach Gorski, Steve Keen, the guide, and we're out there, and we were done. I went into Chatham, And in Chatham, there was a lighthouse, Coast Guard, really cool. But the beach that is there, it has the dunes and the actual dune grass, so the native plants that are there, the native birds that are there. And the ocean itself, as you're going out of Chatham, as it's beginning to open up, there are these huge sandbars that are out there. It is a, talk about a photo place. Here is the perfect photo op that you want to either go take a photo on it. I recommend taking it because there's a walkway where you park your vehicle from above to take pictures going down. Some great photos. And then you go into Chatham. Downtown, it's got some great little shops and antique stores and places to eat, and a great, call them a strolling town. And, you know, there are many strolling towns along Cape Cod. And in their little center right there, they had a great white shark exhibit that is there. And towns and their stores and things sponsored these. So the great white sharks may have been about 2 or 3 feet long. They're all the same size. And people got to paint them different. So some people paint them with fluorescent colors and psychedelic colors. Some people actually had murals painted on them, and they were posted up. You could see that. I was telling you about all the different places you can check out my photos, because my social media person puts up photo a day, photo every, or two photos a day of everywhere I'm going across America. And if you check and scroll through, because probably by the time you listen to this show, that photo will be up. And I took a photo of all of those sharks there, and you're going, so why do they have great white sharks there? Because there's a great amount of seals. So think about the way that, you know, the food chain goes. So the great amount of white sharks, I'm babbling for a second. So the great white sharks that are up there, they're up there because there's seals that are up there. It's their, you know, one of their food sources. So there has been an increase in white, great whites. And it's not there. And people are like, well, they're there for me in Jaws. And I know that Jaws was filmed up there. Well, Jaws was filmed up there, but the original Jaws actually occurred in a river in the 1920s. You could actually read a book on this. And it actually happened in New Jersey. And it was with a bull shark. It wasn't with a great white. They, obviously, hey, book was written and made for movie stuff. When you go up there at Cape Cod, there's the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. My cousin, Dr. Mike Bruno, one of the famous oceanographic engineers in the world, for real. Mike's big time guy. He did his doctorate up there. So the Woods Hole is a great place. And you also want to check on these two other things before I go back into and teach you a little bit about freshwater. One night, Mike said, oh, we need to go into this small little bay here, and I need to show you something. And I do recommend you should not be swimming at night, and you should not be, you know, you want to go with lifeguards, et cetera. But Mike said, and we're just going to wade into the water, and you need to see something. And this was the summertime. We're up there. And as you're wading into the water, all of a sudden the water around your body begins to glow green. So if you're standing in ankle-deep water, the water around your ankles are glowing green. And when you got into waist-deep water, if you cupped it in your hands, the water was glowing green. No, it was not toxic waste. And you throw it into the air, and it glows, and all of a sudden it disappears. Because there are microscopic organisms, and a big term is bioluminescence. And what happens is, it's almost like, you know, a firefly. And the bioluminescence, these microscopic organisms in the water, take the heat from your body, and they glow. So as I was throwing it, and the heat was leaving their bodies or their organism bodies, the heat goes away. So obviously the luminescence goes away. And you can actually check to see when in the summertime that is there. And they'll tell you where to go. It's just a really cool thing. And you also want to check out the Anything But A Boat Race. We were up there for the Anything But A Boat Race, and this is many moons ago. And it is exactly that. And there are people that will build, they're not allowed to be called boats, they're crafts. There are people that will build these crafts all year long for this race, and it's just a fun little race. And I didn't know that this race was there for you know, what people were doing. So Mike told us that he entered us in a race, and we're a bunch of college kids at the time, or post grads, all of us at the time. And we go up there, and we entered into the race. So I borrowed a picnic table, I borrowed some pontoons, and I did put them all back when we were done. And I built this little floating picnic table, and we entered in about swim fins. So we entered our craft inside there. We show up, and there are guys dressed in Vikings with pulleys and wheels, things they had built for the entire year. And they're like looking down from two stories up from what they built, looking down on us. And like, I'm sort of just like smirky going, holy moly, what do we get ourselves into? And you go to this anything but a boat race, and there's like in the bay a little channel, and they have a course marked out for you. And while they're there, you have to paddle around a boat, and there's a guy who's up there with a fire hose, and like he's knocking off Vikings with the fire hose because it's just a fun little thing. And they had this one Shamu. You didn't even know that it was below the water. And as a craft is going by, they begin to blow it up and it starts to inflate coming out of the water. And any craft that is on there, it'll just knock it over. And they sort of select who's going to win. And who wins the race but us? And how we won the race, it was probably had to be for pity. And we are on whatever the Cape Cod newspaper was up there. I'll call it the Cape Cod Gazette. The next day, we are on the front cover of the Cape Cod Gazette. And I felt bad for like the Viking dudes and all these other people because we were the ones sort of late entry, get in there. It must have been the pity factor. But you can also check out the Anything But a Boat Race, and that bioluminescence seems to go together time-wise. So you do want to check that if you're going up there. Also understand that if you go up to Cape Cod in the summertime, many of the, because they're historic highways, they're single lane highways. So check, you know, in season traffic, and it's not severe traffic, but there is traffic on those single lane roads. Since I am a absolute morning person, when I go places, just because I get up, I come into the studio here at like sometimes at 5 a.m. because I've already had breakfast and cleaned and I'm ready to roll. So I'm going to tell you this. You also want to check, I guess we'll check, call it highway traffic, you know, that type of thing. So now let's return to our Cape Cod nature and fishing experience, and let's go to freshwater. So going into freshwater, well, guess what? You still need all the things I spoke about, the safety gear, the PFDs, the hats, the sunglasses, the sunblock, the water, the energy, the food, and all that. Still use the sit-on-top kayaks to have the sandals because, once again, I like to get up, bang, bang, get up, and now, I remember, it is the kayaks were rinsed from seawater, so I am not carrying any of those salts, raising the salinity content of a freshwater pond. Very important. Gear, ultralight. It's funny, when I am in freshwater, I use an ultralight, and I have an ultralight rod that I've had for about 30 years now, and I take it everywhere with me. I have 4-pound test on it, and people go, well, you can't catch real big fish. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I've caught 5- and 6-pound bass on my ultralight with 4-pound test. And people are like, well, you got to use it. No, you don't. Because I'm telling you that whether they're largemouth or smallmouth, this guy is. And I like the fight on ultralight. Rhymes and all that. So I like that. You know, and up there, there's many largemouth. I did catch a smallie in one of the freshwater ponds. There's some perch. There's some pickerel. And if you happen to find in the saltwater, seawater, because it's a cousin, not a freshwater perch, but there's white perch up there too. So in some of those salt ponds, you might find, and check it out with locals. They're a good thing, but we're talking freshwater, so let's go there. And I have a go-to lure. It's a Meps Aglia white shinier spinner. And it's the first thing I start with. And people that are up there, they're going, no, you should try this. And again, I've got a go-to lure. So when I'm in fresh, this is something that I use anywhere in America. That's the first lure I use if I'm using spinners. So that's one of the things. And then I'll start to go to, you know, they have little spinner baits, little baby Charlie Brewer, little worms on them and all that. You can go wacky worm and you know, the wacky worms are the Senko worms and all, wacky worm rig. They work really, really well. I'd say you definitely need a pliers because up there, it is like pickerel haven. I caught one pickerel that was like the size of Alaska. Well, it wasn't quite that big. Not that I ever exaggerate, but he was a monster of a pickerel. So you want to, hey, catch and release guy, you want to release them. And yes, pickerel do have teeth, and you do need the pliers for that. Once again, I've got the underwater camera, and I didn't mention before, but I have this little tether that I created with the underwater camera. So I attach it onto my kayak. So it's the tether's long enough so I can pick it up and shoot a picture and put it back down. And if the camera was to fall overboard, two things. I just reel it back in because it's got this little tether, you know, about 2 or 3 feet of tether. And then it's, since it's an underwater camera, you can actually, and you can take a video of, you know, being fish being released and all that. But you also don't have to worry about it getting wet and all that. And I take the same dry bags. And something I didn't mention before in both places, your keys for your vehicle. Well, if they get wet, they get ruined. And believe me, I learned this the hard way many moons ago. And the keys, for a new vehicle. Now they're like $300 for a key to replace it. And the one years ago was like $150 I had to replace. So I found a dry bag for a cell phone case that is the perfect size dry bag for your keys. So I use this little mini dry bag for my keys, put it in my PFD, lock it closed. And then I always tell people, by the way, if I ever die, the truck is yours because I don't need it anymore. And I always let people I know, I say, hey, okay, my keys are right here. So you have that. And I always have the small cooler in there, you know, because I'm always bringing food with me as well. So, you know, taking those things with me. Now, here's your hint, especially for early spring fishing. I guess it's both fresh and seawater, but definitely for fresh. As soon as I get to a place, because if the waters are colder, the fish are going to respond a little slower. And this is just, hey, part of nature. So the first thing I look for is a sandy bank somewhere, because the sandy bank, sand will heat up because earth heats up 5 times quicker than water. And with that sandy bank, the water, so it's clearer there, that water tends to heat up quicker. So fish tend to congregate early spring there. See? So you got a really cool hint. So what I typically do is I scout with my eyes very quickly or get in the kayak as soon as I'm out in the water. And that's the first place that I head to. And it's also because, once again, I like to stand up as many times as I can getting out of the kayak. And on this last fishing excursion, my buddies who I'm with, John Crane, his dad, Coach Gorski, these guys are counters. And they'll always count, like I caught 37 fish and this and that. And I never count because they'll always say to me, well, how many fish did you catch? I say, I caught a bunch of bass. Well, how many? A lot, a little. And because I'm not a counter. But I always get to this, and I know that I can catch way more fish, and not just them, because, by the way, these guys are brilliant, brilliant fishermen. But I know that this is my little hint that I can catch way more fish than the average Joe. Get a Joey B's Out There Adventure. The average Joe, by going to these places first. And then after that, and I've stood up a little bit, and I'll paddle on and, you know, a couple other places, because, again, it's nature, and I want to see. There were ospreys feeding and some, you know, whatever birds are there. And I taking care of that and some photos of some, you know, beautiful nature. So, and then I come back, and if I need to stand, I already know the place to fish and stand. Now, here's one of the other things, and I do this, talk about this with my vacations across America. You want to have little or no social media there. And some people are going, well, I can't live without my cell phone. Well, yeah, you can. Try it. I guarantee you, after you haven't used it for hours, you will actually still be alive. And you're going to find that life is a lot simpler and laid back and nice. So here is my cool Mayflower fact for you. So think about this. They took the Mayflower over, you know, about landing by Plymouth Rock. So they didn't land on Plymouth Rock. And you could actually go up there and see Plymouth Rock, by the way. It's out in the water. And because they knew that it was going to be a rocky coast up there, they knew they couldn't take the big ship in. So watch how crazy this is. Before they ever left, so they're in the mother country, they had another ship built, a smaller one. They built the ship, took it apart, put it inside the Mayflower, sailed all the way to America, took months to build the ship. So they rebuilt the ship on the Mayflower, put it into the water, and sailed the little ship on shore. So they took an actual, once they got to America, it took like an extra 3 months to get to shore with the smaller ship. So that is actually probably one of the cooler. See, here you go. The next Thanksgiving, you're sitting around and people are talking about the first Thanksgiving. You go, hey, I got the coolest fact than you do. And actually, if you listen to my show on wild turkeys, I did research and my graduate work on turkey vocalization. I tell you some of the coolest turkey facts to share around the table, but now you've got the coolest Mayflower fact to share around the table. So until next time, enjoy your vacations across America. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures. Joey B's Adventure. Joey B's Adventure. Joey B's Adventure. Joey B's Adventure.
That was awesome.